This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Let's talk about nursery rhyme conservatism tonight. Sean Spicer is here. He's going to talk about this Trump-Biden debate, culture war stuff, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, before we get to nursery rhyme conservatism, let's do something we do all the time on the show, way too often, but something we feel strongly about. We honor the fallen, especially the fallen in training. Captain John Robertson, U.S. Air Force captain, just lost his life. He was training at a base in Texas. There was some sort of ejection seat mishap on the ground. I don't know the details. I don't care. I just want us all to honor this warrior. Gave his life for his country. Pray for his family. All right? Rest in peace, sir. Now, there's a phrase I use a lot, and I feel like it probably should explain it in a little more depth. Nursery rhyme conservatism. What does that mean? Nursery rhyme conservatism. Well, there are a lot of reasons for why I think nursery rhyme conservatism exists. And maybe to explain what it is, I should start with those reasons. First and foremost, we are a nation that was founded by Christians, by born-again Christians. That's what we were founded by. Go read all the writings of the founders. Go read how they thought about God and everything else. Go read the Declaration of Independence. It's God all throughout the thing. We were a country founded by Christians. And while obviously any one religion, one belief system doesn't have a monopoly on peace, and I realize Christians have done violent things throughout history like any other religions have, but in general, Christians are taught to be peaceful people, to live in peace. At least Americanized Christianity, that is very much what they believe. Hey, just love and love and turn the other cheek and love and love and love and love and love. And I have huge problems with that kind of teaching, not with Christianity, not with the Bible. I think it's being abused. But that has been a strain that has run through this country. And it's been a great thing for the most part. Let me be clear about that. We are a nation that focused on morality. On right and wrong. We want to do things the right way. Have we always? Of course not. No nation does, but we have wanted to do things the right way. So that's part of it. And that's a good part of nursery rhyme conservatism. And there's another part of the why nursery rhyme conservatism exists. And this part is, well, it's cowardice masked as virtue. That's really what it is. Cowardice masked as virtue. So let me ask you something. Think about this. Have you ever heard of, speaking of the Bible, have you ever heard of the Bible's reference, Psalm 23, to the valley of the shadow of death? Everyone has heard of that. Everybody. Whether you go to church or not, everyone's heard, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Everyone's heard of it. Well, did you know that that is actually a valley? It's more like a canyon, a gully, to be honest. And actually, I've stood over the top of it and looked down into it. And one of the fascinating things about it, beyond the fact that King David was running for his life down that valley at one point in time, beyond that, if you look down in it at a certain place, you will see a monastery built into the side of the mountain. I'm going somewhere with this, you're just gonna have to be patient. And it's built down in the bottom of the canyon into the side of the mountain, and it's the coolest freaking thing in the world. And there are, to this day, there are monks and their servants and whatnot who live there. And what do? All day long, they read the Bible, they pray, they worship, they have dedicated their lives to that life. Okay, that's fine, that's good, it's a cool thing. Now, let's go to New York City. NYPD cop. He had a rough beat last night, drug addict. He killed somebody last night. Man was trying to attack his partner. He had to pull out his pistol and shoot the guy in the face last night. Now, let me ask you something. Is the monk who has separated himself from the world and just worships and prays all day long, Is he a better person? Is he a holier person, a more moral person than the cop? No, he's not. The cop has chosen to wade into the world, to fight back against the evil, to get his hands dirty. I'm not insulting the monk, good for the monk, but I do not look at the monk as a holy man and the cop as kind of a bad guy. I simply don't. We have abused the word of God. We've abused so many things in this country that we truly, truly believe on the right, so much of the right, maybe not you, but so much of the right truly believes to fight back is wrong. To wade into the muck and fight against evil is somehow immoral or a violation of our principles. When, if you're going to reference the Bible, as we have several times, throughout the Bible, there are examples of calling out evil. Jesus himself, you hypocrites, you brood of vipers. King David collecting 200 foreskins and was named a man after God's own heart. That stuff's in the Bible too. But nursery rhyme conservatism has taught the right not to fight back. In fact, it's taught the right that if they lose to the communists because they refuse to fight back, that they're the good guys. That you can sit there and lose, you can give up your country, you can give up your culture, you can never make them feel pain. You don't try to make enemies of anybody. You don't try to take away their power. But if you lose and you lose the right way, you did the right thing. That's nursery rhyme conservatism. Nursery rhyme conservatism believes Marvel movies are real, or Captain America, the perfect guy with perfect teeth and perfect manners, can come along and he'll fight against evil, but he'll do it the right way. You know, he'll do it politely every single time. That's not how life works. You want to see nursery rhyme conservatism? Do you remember when Bill Barr, Trump's second useless attorney general, remember when he got up and said this?
Those who broke the laws will be held to account. But this cannot be, and it will not be, a tit-for-tat exercise. We are not going to lower the standards just to achieve a result. The only way to stop this vicious cycle, the only way to break away from a dual system of justice, is to make sure that we scrupulously apply the single and proper standard of justice for everybody.
Wow. That is so inspiring. And now that Joe Biden is president and his Attorney General Merrick Garland have taken over, do you see how inspired the communist was by Bill Barr's good conduct? It's been amazing. They looked at Bill Barr and they said, wow, that's a guy. He's not abusing his office. He's not attacking his political opponents. Guys, I'm inspired. I think I'll do the same. Isn't that what Joe Biden and Merrick Garland said? No, it's not. Laying down for evil is not good. It is not moral. It is not right. You will hear people say things on the right. The right loves to say these things. When fighting monsters, be careful never to become a monster. It's an old Nitschke quote. Yeah? United States Marines in the Pacific used to take explosives and toss them into Japanese caves and blow up everyone who was inside. And sometimes there were women and children being used as human shields in those caves. And they did it because they knew they had to win and they couldn't go in there or they would all die. Were they wrong? Or were they fighting against evil? And when you fight against evil, you oftentimes have to get your hands dirty. I'm not calling for anyone to be evil. I'm not calling for anyone to be immoral. But this nursery rhyme conservatism, we're better than that, my principles, is exactly what has gotten us here. And you know how you know that? Whenever you see anyone on the right talk like that, the communists love it. They sit back, they see Bill Barr give a speech about no tit for tat, and they laugh. These chumps. There's nothing moral, there's nothing biblical, there's nothing right about allowing your country and your culture to turn into filth like we have allowed ourselves to happen here. They're cutting the penises off of teenage boys in this country. I don't want to hear about your principles. I want you to fight back against the demons. Reject nursery rhyme conservatism wherever you find it. Whenever anybody tries to throw roadblocks, stumbling blocks in front of you, when you're ready to fight back against evil, you politely tell them to get their soft butts back to the sidelines where they belong, because it is time for us to take back power and think like conquerors. You have communists in your area, no matter where you're listening to me. Maybe they're on the school board. They probably are. Maybe they're in the library. Maybe they're on the parks department. I don't know where they are. You can live peacefully with them if you want. I suggest you go take their power away from them. Go make an enemy. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, we have a bunch we have to discuss. Let's discuss the debate, this Trump-Biden debate with Sean Spicer in a moment. Before we discuss that, let's discuss the timeshare you think you're stuck in, but you're not. Lone Star Transfer will legally and permanently get you out of your timeshare. All you have to do is call them. I know these timeshare companies do this to everyone. You're not alone. They trap you in. They don't tell you you're locked in for life. And soon you want out and they tell you you can't get out. Pay your annual fees. We'll sue you. Stop calling the timeshare company. Stop emailing them. They're the con artists. Call Lone Star Transfer. This is a family business. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. And they're successful 99% of the time. Legally and permanently getting you out. Make a phone call. 844-310-2646. We'll be back.
Explanation was not they didn't like Donald Trump. They said he participated in an erection, and I have to an insurrection. And I have to say, I got up at 5 this morning to do Casey Hunt's show, and I'm exhausted.
Not Jake Tapper's finest hour, but I can't wait to see him moderate a debate between Trump and Biden. I'm sure Trump-hating Jake Tapper will handle that well. Joining me now, my friend Sean Spicer of the incredible Sean Spicer Show, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the First TV. He's on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify. Sean's freaking everywhere. Of course he would be. Okay, Sean, Donald Trump, despite his age, still very clearly has outstanding energy.
Jesse, I think you got that clip wrong. I think you got that clip wrong with Jake. I think that the issue there was he wasn't taking a dig at Donald Trump. He was staring at Jeffrey Toobin. That's my take on that.
Oh, gosh. All right, quit. Look, obviously Donald Trump has outstanding energy, especially for a man his age, still up there giving hour-long speeches at rallies and things like that. Joe Biden is half dead. Everyone can see that. So if they're going to debate, the only way Joe Biden could handle Donald Trump is if they accept a debate invitation from a hostile actor in a highly controlled environment. And alas, that's what we accepted. Could you explain that to me, Sean?
I can't explain it, only to say this, having been around Trump and helping to negotiate some of his forums in 2016, he doesn't care. My whole view was I'd say to him, hey, here's what we want. The only thing he ever asked to me in advance of the NBC Commander-in-Chief Forum, he said, I just want to go first. And I said, well, here are the other things that we want to secure. And he goes, I don't care about anything else. I want to be first. And that's when he was going to face off against Hillary Clinton. And luckily, I was able to get that for him. But he doesn't care. He's like, I don't care if it's Jake Tapper. I don't care if it's Joe Biden. I want a shot at Joe Biden. I'll outmaneuver him. I'll outdebate him. Nobody can do that. I care about the movement because we give CNN credibility. We humanize, to use their word, Jake Tapper, who is a Democratic staffer. He worked for Chelsea Clinton's mother-in-law. He was the spokesman for the Brady Foundation. This is a guy who hates the issues, the candidate, and the movement, and we're allowing the debate. So it's not a question for me about whether Donald Trump can handle him. He can handle anybody. It's the question is, why do we always give in? Trump, the negotiator, should have said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you your CNN with no audience, no RFK, and your moderator, and I'll even throw in an ABC with David Muir. You got to give me one debate, and I don't care where it is. Here's your choice. Jesse Kelly, Sean Spicer, anyone on the first, I don't care. I mean, why didn't we get something out of that? That's what I think. Give him 2-1. but get something.
Okay, Sean, I want to lean on your knowledge here because people don't know what you know. They haven't seen the things you've seen behind the scenes and how these things work. Everyone woke up yesterday and they saw this, and some people cheered and some people like me cringed and yelled about it. But how do these negotiations work behind closed doors? Because as you mentioned, you've actually done it. I mean, how many freaking people have actually done it? You've done it. Who's doing the negotiating? What's the back and forth like? Give us the inside baseball stuff.
So there's two pieces to this. Number one, we negotiated forums and primary debates. That's different. And a lot of times it's the senior folks from the campaign negotiating with the entity, meaning the news organizations. The presidential debates are generally, have always been, done with the Presidential Commission on Debate. That's where these guys went around the system and negotiated with each other. There's a lot of behind the scenes. And again, the problem, if you're Donald Trump's negotiator, i.e. Chris LaCivita or Susie Wiles, is you're looking at this from a staff standpoint. You have a client in Donald Trump who's saying, anytime, anywhere, I'll take on anybody. And he projects that. And I think that's great because Donald Trump will go on CNN. He's already done a town hall. Joe Biden won't do an interview with the New York Times. But to your question, these are behind the scenes negotiations with the campaign senior advisors. And then ultimately, what happened yesterday is the network, seeing this thing evolve, immediately started issuing invitations. And the Biden campaign and then subsequently the Trump campaign saying, we'll accept this. So you saw a CNN invitation, they accepted. You saw an ABC invitation, they accepted. Here's what you didn't see. Fox also sent out an invitation that Trump accepted. The Biden folks were very clear, we're not going to accept any organization that hasn't hosted a DNC primary debate, which was immediately done to exclude any organization like Fox or The First. So again, this was very carefully done. And by the way, they even did it just in case, you know, I'm a contributor over at News Nation. They said in 2016, they didn't even allow it to be 2020 because they knew that that would carve out certain other organizations. They were very careful about how they did this. They did everything except for the requiring that Jill Biden be the moderator. This is all on Biden's terms. The one thing that they have going for them is they actually will get Biden on a stage. And I think that we can all admit that getting Biden on a stage and having to defend all of these policies is going to be important because look at Jesse, there is nothing going well in this country when it comes to our policy, our immigration, our economy, crime and safety, and then you look foreign policy-wise. The failed Afghanistan withdrawal has led to chaos around the world. And Donald Trump, if he's smart, he starts this debate by saying, I'm willing to put up my record against yours, Joe. Tell me what you've done well. Here's what I did. Energy independence, secure the border. The economy had the lowest unemployment for all categories of Americans. We didn't have chaos around the world. Name one thing that you're proud of.
Yeah, it's the contrast is so stark if you can do that. Okay, Trump went on Hugh Hewitt's show, and he said something that I've been thinking for a while. You and I have talked about it before. Anyway, here's what he said.
But I really think he has to debate. He might as well get it over with. Probably should do it early so that he can, you know, he's not going to get any better.
No, that's but June and September is great.
Every day is a down factor for him.
Do you think if his infirmity increases, they will dump him, Mr. President, at the convention, replace him with Kamala or Gavin or someone like that?
I do. And I don't think they'll have a choice.
Sean, I 100% agree with Donald Trump there. I've been saying it for the longest time, and I think it's such a no-brainer for Democrats, and I realize there are some real roadblocks there. What do you do with Dome? What do you do with other things? But they can take all the things people are mad about that you just pointed out, drop them in Joe's lap, wheel his old butt out the back door, and bring out a fresh face, and then, well, I don't know that we're not in trouble in that scenario. Am I crazy?
No, and here's what people have to understand. There's two scenarios. Up until the convention, Joe Biden, by party rule, becomes the nominee because those delegates are what we call bound in the world of party politics, meaning he basically owns the delegates. So he can do one of two things. One is at the convention, unbind them, meaning he says, I am releasing my delegates, vote for whomever you want, allow the convention to do this, which is what happened prior to 1968. That's not going to happen. He doesn't want a free-for-all. What he wants to do is anoint his successor. And after the convention, once he becomes the legal nominee, and remember, these are legally binding things. There's a lot of campaign finance and other logistics that goes along with becoming the nominee. Once he becomes the nominee at the convention, afterwards, there's a mechanism for the DNC leadership to replace him if he were to step down. He controls the DNC, so he could legitimately pick his successor and make a deal where it would happen post-convention and bring in that fresh face. And I agree with you. If you can put somebody in that has a very short runway where you wouldn't have a lot of time to build up that opposition research, they'd be able to present themselves as, I'm the new guy, here's why I'm new and different, I'm not Joe Biden, which is frankly what people don't like, even Democrats. But if you could tell Democrats and progressive, here you go, we got a fresh face for you, I think that's going to be important to keep in mind. So I would keep your calendar open between the last week of August and say the second and third week of September.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sean, you are the best, my brother. I wish you were in Milwaukee with me to break bread, but I guess we'll have to get together another time. Sean, thank you, bud. All right, we have Mary Margaret Olihan coming up next. Talk about some cultural issues before we get to Mary Margaret. Have you slept well lately? You ever have trouble sleeping? Staying asleep, falling asleep? What do? You take something, don't you? Everyone does. You take something. But then how do you feel the next day? Do you feel refreshed, ready to go? No, you feel like crap. I do. It's happened to me my whole life. I can't sleep. Better take something. Wake up. I wish I just stayed up all night. I'm so daggone groggy. But then I found Dream Powder from Beam. Beam is the one who makes it. It's delicious. It's essentially a cup of cinnamon hot chocolate I have every single night before bed. Warm up a little glass of milk, mix in some of this Dream Powder. It's all natural stuff. It's melatonin, things like that. And so you just kind of drift off to sleep. And you wake up 8 hours later, no grogginess at all. You just wake up ready to go. Does that sound good to you? Your whole life gets better when you sleep well. Go get some Dream Powder. ShopBeam.com/JesseKelly gets you 40% off. So don't pay full price like a chump. Go get some Dream Powder. We'll be back.
Our own nation is led by a man who publicly and proudly proclaims his Catholic faith, but at the same time is delusional enough to make the sign of the cross during a pro-abortion rally. He has been so vocal in his support for the murder of innocent babies that I'm sure to many people, it appears that you can be both Catholic and pro-choice. He is not alone. From the man behind the COVID lockdowns to the people pushing dangerous gender ideologies onto the youth of America, they all have a glaring thing in common. They are Catholic. This is an important reminder that being Catholic alone doesn't cut it. These are the sorts of things we are told in polite society to not bring up. You know, the difficult and unpleasant things. But if we are going to be men and women for this time in history, we need to stop pretending that the Church of Nice is a winning proposition.
Daggone, man. Give me about 100 more men like that with the guts to do that. Joining me now, Mary Margaret Olihan, senior reporter of the wonderful Daily Signal. She also wrote the book, D-Trans, which is a revealing and frankly heartbreaking book. Mary, I didn't mean heartbreaking bad. It was heartbreaking good book, but dang, it was pretty revealing. We'll get to that in a minute. But this is so rare now, but man, it was so refreshing to see an athlete basically risk his career to speak for his convictions. And I'm unlike everyone else, I expect him to be cut in about 24 hours. But man, I thought that was awesome.
I thought it was so awesome too. I was so inspired, and I would be willing to bet that he had a conversation with his wife and his close friends before he gave that speech and said, I have to be ready for the NFL to cut me for this, because it is not your average NFL speech. It was pro-family, pro-marriage, pro-wife, big wife guy, very, just really inspiring. And he's a serious Catholic. He takes his faith really seriously. So that means that he stands for traditional marriage, gender roles, all of that. And the left has not appreciated this speech. They have very much so melted down over it, which I find really interesting. I stood up for him on social media, and I've been amazed at how many people I would consider conservative just flooding my mentions and telling me that, you know, if I'm going to support Harrison Butker, maybe I should be in the kitchen making him a sandwich, which is not very pro-woman, if you ask me.
No, it's not, although I am very pro-sandwich. And it's funny you brought up that point, Mary, because I found it to be pretty revealing. The man obviously adores his wife, reveres his mother. It was very obvious to anyone paying attention. But he spoke, and he spoke about being a homemaker and what a treasure that is and how important that is. And as you said, it wasn't just from the left, from the right. So many women were angry about that. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think he kind of struck a nerve because we have a cultural crisis right now of women who desire marriage, they desire family, they want a good, strong man that can lead their family. But unfortunately, due to the times we're living in, there aren't that many men who know how to do that. And so these women are feeling this void here and looking for someone that can do that for them, and they're not finding it. And so I think for many women on the right, their instinct when they hear something like this is to say, no, you're wrong, that motherhood is not something that I desire this greatly. And they kind of want to push it away and take a step back because it hurts, you know, when they can't have that. They would rather push away from it a little bit than really to agree with Harrison Butker that, yes, motherhood is one of the most joyful callings or vocations that there is, and that the joy that you can find in motherhood is honestly, I think, unparalleled. And I'm not a mother myself, but from what I've seen of my friends and my own mother and my family, it's a really beautiful thing. And I don't think we should be criticizing Harrison Butker for praising that.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. Okay, let's shift gears here to some other things. There's obviously a war on the church. It's a war, it's been declared by the federal government. You have the FBI infiltrating churches. We know now from leaked memos that they're already inside of so many churches. And we have pro-lifers, seven of them, just got lengthy prison sentences, two of them in their 70s, one of them a veteran. And yet, Mary, honestly, it's not that I'm shocked that the federal government would do this, because the federal government's evil and it's run by demons. What bothers me is how silent so much of the church is in this country. Just going to try to what? Turn the other cheek our way through this whole thing? Are we going to stand up and start getting more involved?
I would certainly like to know. And you're completely right. We have seen very profound silence from our religious leaders as more and more Americans are targeted for their pro-life beliefs. Kristen Clark, who heads the DOJ Civil Rights Division, is the one that has been in charge of prosecuting or charging these pro-lifers with the FACE Act, which is the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act. That act is supposed to protect pregnancy centers and Catholic churches as well. But I think you can guess how often the DOJ uses it to protect churches and pregnancy centers, even though there have been hundreds of attacks on pregnancy centers and churches since the Dobbs leak, when we found that Roe was about to be overturned. So we very much have a two-tiered system of standard of justice when it comes to pro-lifers and this FACE Act. And lawmakers like Congressman Chip Roy and Senator Mike Lee have called for the FACE Act to be defunded, for it to be repealed, and largely gotten rid of, because they don't see a way that it can be used effectively without being a double standard.
Mary, the GOP, honestly, I'm laughing before I even ask the question. Where's the GOP in all this? I mean, where they always are, sitting on their hands, sucking their thumbs, afraid of the media, afraid of Democrats. But how in the world, look, we have a whole gaggle of Republicans out there in New York City today defending Donald Trump for being on trial, and that's good. I applaud them for that. But where's the gaggle of Republicans speaking out against Christian 70-year-old women getting tossed in the clink for the rest of their natural lives? The silence has been deafening from the useless GOP.
The silence has been deafening, and I think part of the reason is because these are nuanced cases that are hard for staffers to understand. So my guess is the staffers are less likely to kind of dive into it if it's not very simple messaging, unfortunately. But I will also say that the pro-life movement has always struggled to find relevance when it comes to the GOP. You know, the abortion issue is not a sexy one. It's one that has struggled to maintain popularity among the GOP. And I think, unfortunately, that's because some members are just not actually pro-life. And this crossover here seems to be an easy opportunity. You know, it's not just abortion, it's also weaponization of the DOJ. It seems like an easy crossover in terms of messaging. So I am curious to see if more Republicans speak up on it, because now Lauren Handy, one of these pro-life activists, will spend almost 5 years in jail. And she will spend almost 5 years in jail because she tried to stop abortions from taking place in the nation's capital, where, by the way, there are no laws restricting abortion, which is, you know, the nation's capital, the most powerful country in the world, has no laws restricting abortion. And this is where all our lawmakers are every single day. You would think there might be more interest in protecting the unborn in the most powerful city in the most powerful country in the world. But that's where we're at.
Well, who has time for unborn babies when you're worried about Colombia and protests? Okay, Mary, tell everyone, I already know about it, tell everyone about this book, D-Trans, you have coming out.
So I have this book coming out. It's publishing May 28th, so a little less than 2 weeks, but you can pre-order it now. I spoke with many detransitioners, young people who tried to change their gender and then realized this is impossible. But this was only after they had taken hormones for years that should change their bodies, and in some cases undergone really invasive and horrible surgeries, such as a double mastectomy. And I wrote the book based stories of these detransitioners so that people can read it and understand what actually happened. You know, it's light on the commentary, it's heavy on the stories, and I wanted people to get a good glimpse into these intimate and vulnerable moments so that they can understand for themselves how devastating gender ideology is for our youth.
I cannot believe we live in a country where we're chopping the breasts off of teenage girls. Gosh, just more than I can take sometimes. Mary, I want people to go get the book. Go get the book, D-Trans. Mary, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, jeez.
That's so sad, man. It's so sad. Whatever. All right. You want to talk about space for a minute? We have some super brain coming on. He's worried about the space race and China and nukes and all kinds of stuff. We'll talk to him in a second. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you about coffee, baby. The best coffee. My coffee company, Blackout Coffee. No, I don't think it counts as my coffee company because I just buy coffee there. I don't own it. I realize I made it. Whatever, I love Blackout Coffee. I love their coffee. They deliver it to my front door. I love their values, honestly. Their values are why I buy from Blackout Coffee, because they share my values. This is a company, much like Harrison Butker, they're not hiding their values. They're not hiding under the bed, worried about backlash. They're out there. They're printing it on their merch. God, guns, America, life. Don't you want to support a business like that? We all drink coffee. Why not drink coffee and support someone who supports you? How about 20% off your first order? BlackoutCoffee.com/Jesse gets you that. Go get yourself the best coffee. We'll be back. Well, did you see that video? Yesterday, our Secretary of State, he's out there doing the hard work of diplomacy. He was playing guitar in Ukraine. And it's funny, while he was doing that, Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin were meeting together to discuss their ongoing cooperation in the joint superpowers against the United States of America. We are doing well here. Joining me now, Greg Autry, author of the book Red Moon Rising, How America Will Beat China on the Final Frontier. Okay, Greg, there are a lot of metrics that don't look great right now, especially economically, even militarily, between us and China. How will America defeat such a big empire?
Well, by embracing our free market competitive advantages, their centralized state-owned economy, and not making the same mistake we've made in every other industry. We are not going to send them our intellectual property, our capital, and our markets, and then bend over and wait to see what happens. The good news about space is, because of national security concerns, the ITAR regulations and other federal laws have always made it very, very difficult for companies to run over and cash their China checks and betray America that way. So that won't happen here.
Greg, before we get into the space portion of this, which is obviously going to be the meat of the issue, what are your credentials? Tell people who you are.
Sure. I am the director and clinical professor of space leadership, policy, and business at Arizona State University's Thunderbird School of Global Management. As a research scholar, I've been studying the commercial space industry for longer than anybody, over two decades. I served on the NASA transition team, the agency review team for President Trump in 2016, and was the White House liaison to NASA in 2017. In 2020, President Trump appointed me to be the chief financial officer of NASA. Unfortunately, hashtag 2020, the Senate had a meltdown, so there was never a confirmation vote there. I've served on several federal committees looking at issues in space, including at the National Academies and the FAA.
Okay, so let's talk about the modern space race. Most Americans, myself included, when they think about that, we think in an old way, you know, the race to be the first on the moon. What is the modern space race?
In a lot of ways, it's a reboot. Space Race 2.0 has many of the factors of Space Race 1.0. In Space Race 1.0, it was, of course, the United States versus the Soviet Union during the old Cold War. And getting to the moon first served as an opportunity for President Kennedy, who was honestly a good Cold Warrior, to slap the communist and show everybody that the American system could outperform them. It's hard for us to believe, but at that time, there was a lot of fascination with the Soviet model, and a lot of countries were lining up because they really thought that the future was in global communism, and that that would be where science, engineering, and standard of living advancements would occur. And the moon race really, to a great extent, proved that that was not the case. Fast forward, we now have Cold War 2.0 clearly shaping up with the Chinese. We've finally woken up. You know, Peter Navarro and I wrote a book called Death by China 12 years ago, saying, these guys are not our friends. People finally see that. Even the Biden administration has admitted that the Chinese are military aggressive and committing genocide. So we've got the same issue going on. Again, there's a race to the moon. This time it is to stay and to exploit the resources that are found there, including things like rare earth elements and potential propellants for rockets and other things. And we're in a real competition to make that happen that most people aren't aware of, but the Chinese are very aware of.
Okay, so I hate to even ask this question, but there's us, there's Russia, there's China. I know those daggone Ruskies have been famously pretty good when it comes to things like rockets and missiles. Who's winning this race right now?
Right now, the U.S. is way ahead. The Russians have fallen out of second place and the Chinese have eclipsed them. The problem is the Chinese are diligently and ruthlessly moving forward. The Russians are almost out of the game. They have not made the investments for many years that they needed to make in space. They had bad management at Roscosmos. And frankly, they've been gutting their civilian and space exploration programs in order to send people to the front in Ukraine. So China's the problem. And it's not how far behind they are, it's how quickly they're moving up on us. So they've launched, for instance, several successful lunar landers. They launched another one last Friday that will land in a few weeks. The United States has had two attempts this year to land on the moon. One failed completely and one was a partial success, but the lander fell over. We haven't landed anything on the moon since the 1970s. So China is beating us in some regards. On the military front, there are real concerns, some of which we can talk about, some of which we can't. But Chinese hypersonic rocket technologies appear to exceed U.S. capabilities. They demonstrated a skip rocket that essentially can orbit the Earth and then come down at hypersonic speeds, probably something we can't intercept with our current interception technology we have in Alaska and California. So there are real concerns.
Okay, Greg. Now, is that the main concern? What I'm trying to gauge is militarily, what is the race to get? Is it, do we want to be the first country that has, what, satellites with nuclear weapons that can fire down on anyone at any time? Are we talking space lasers like it's Star Wars? What is the military get that we're trying to get first?
Yeah. Regardless of what the technology is for affecting damage on the surface of the Earth, owning the high ground gives you that position. And whichever country ends up owning what we call cislunar space, the area around the Earth and the Moon, will control the planet and the future of all humankind. If you're down in a valley, you have no choice. You've got to go up and take the heights. before your opponent does, or you're extinct. And that's where we are today. And you're right. We've got nuclear weapons that could be placed in orbit. We have directed energy weapons, which includes lasers and microwave platforms that could destroy our military or our cities from space. And a real concern is something called electromagnetic pulse weapons. If any of you have seen the auroras that we've witnessed recently, these are caused by highly charged radioactive particles hitting the Earth's atmosphere. Right now, it's just pretty. If those charges get too high, they can shut off communications. We've seen that happen before from natural solar flares. And if they get way too high, they can actually destroy all of your electronics. Now, it so happens you can simulate that radioactive atmospheric impingement with nuclear weapons in space. United States and the Soviet Union both tested this in the early 1960s. We had a series of tests. In fact, we opened our book, Peter and I, with that topic. We had a series of tests in the 60s over Hawaii called Starfish Prime, and the folks in Hawaii called them the rainbow bombs because auroras were appearing over Honolulu during these tests, and they would turn off the radios, in some cases destroy parts of the electrical grid. And we didn't have a lot of sophisticated electronics that time, but if you had a cell phone, it probably would have been turned into a brick. China and Russia both have EMPs that they can detonate over U.S. cities, or more likely over targets in Asia like Taipei that they want to invade. If they do that, everything on the ground that's electronic is dead, and probably permanently dead. That means your phone, of course, your laptop computer. It means your car, because if you've got an electric car, it's really nothing but a computer with batteries. It might burst into flames. If you've got a traditional gasoline-powered car, it's all electronic computer integrated systems and electronic ignition. It's dead. Every car on the road will be dead. There won't be any tow trucks capable of coming and towing those dead cars away, and there won't be anybody repairing them, because, in fact, our entire electrical grid will go out. They'll blow out the relays on the grid. Will this be repaired? No, because all the components we need to repair them come either from China or from countries in Asia, which China will be able to cut off access to. And we can't even replace the relays in the primary electrical grid, because we can't get either the relays or the steel needed to make them in these transformers without working with China. It is a way of basically returning us to the Stone Age instantly. And as I say in the book, Gen Z kids are going to have to learn how to sharpen a spear and build a fire without going to YouTube to find a mansplainer survivalist to tell them how to do that.
Well, that's pretty much horrific. Red Moon Rising is the book. Highly recommend. Everyone gets it. Greg, that was endlessly fascinating. I wish it wasn't out of time. Thank you, my sir. All right, we have Light in the Mood next, and now I need one because I'm worried about Chinese space lasers. Hang on. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And this is a little bit of a different lighten the mood. We talk all the time about getting involved. Getting involved, taking back your community first. Legal and local is how we can and will save this country. People like you getting involved. Not this guy running for president or this guy running for Senate. All of us can save the country, and people are beginning to do this. You are beginning to do this. Had a viewer reach out to the show. He turned his anger into action. He's out there knocking on doors, out there busting his butt, and look at those numbers. There is now a rhino puke in the GOP who will no longer be in the GOP because he got bounced in a primary because normal Americans just like you got up off the couch, not just tweeting about it, not just doing all these things, got up, did something, and got a victory from it. You can do it too. You. Not the guy sitting next to you. You. Not me. You. Turn your anger into action. Hey, full disclosure, as soon as I pull this thing out of my ear tonight, I'm going to a local political event myself. I'm doing the same thing. Let's get involved. See you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.